It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Comedian Wyatt Cenac is probably best known for his work as a correspondent on The Daily Show.
We're joined by our senior racist correspondent, Wyatt Cenac.
It's racialist, senior racialist correspondent. Come on, dude, is that beard affecting your ability to read?
And today, he hosts his own show, Problem Areas, on HBO. But long before he made it to television, Wyatt was a high school student in Dallas, Texas, at a private school where most of the kids didn't look like him.
I remember at one point, one of my counselors, my sophomore year, I think I was averaging kind of somewhere between like a low B and a C, and he said, "Hey, that's good. You're the smartest of the black kids." And coming out of that educational experience, I definitely felt like, okay, I lacked a lot as far as like the social growth that I would have liked from an education.
In this season of Problem Areas, Wyatt's focusing on education across the United States, from teacher strikes to school safety. And when I sat down with him, he explained how his private school background shaped his perspective on the school privatization debate.
So often, the conversation that we're having right now with things like school choice, we demonize charter schools. And I understand why people feel like they want to create charter schools. They feel failed by the public school system. And so at least in their inception, that was the idea behind charter schools. It's now become something that you have seen corporate money get really involved in, and capitalism has perhaps perverted what that original intent was. What's a shame is that someone feels failed by the public schools and we can't just fix the public schools.
And we're seeing that play out also with the educators themselves, right? Where on the show, we've covered the teacher strikes across the country. We know you, for the first episode of the show, you guys went down to West Virginia, where essentially the teacher strikes were, you know, started. What was the message that you heard from teachers in West Virginia, teachers that you've interviewed, about their striking?
I think one of the biggest ones is respect and just what feels like a lack of respect for the craft that is teaching.
At least part of the solution needs to be more funding. We need to fill the 700 teacher vacancies.
There's an element of it that I think people dismiss teachers, and so often teachers wind up being labeled as greedy for wanting a living wage.
The whole end game behind the pay raise is to fill those vacancies, is to make sure that we have the best quality education. It isn't so that I can buy a Disney Vacation Club. It's so that, you know, I don't have to say, well, there's been a sub in that position for 3 years because they can't get anybody in here. They won't take the pay.
You're talking about a group of individuals who actually, you know, perform a huge service. It's more than babysitting. And so I think it's getting people to sort of respect and appreciate that, right, they are being entrusted with a lot. And if we don't respect that as a profession, it's going to pay out in ways that we don't recognize as far as low graduation rates. But those are people who now have to go into a workforce. And when we think about innovation, those are people who may not be leaders of innovation. And so recognizing the role that education plays in all that and that teachers play in all that and respecting that, that feels like one of the biggest things that from city to city I experienced from teachers.
We know also that our education system, as we've sort of talked about, is flawed in many ways, our public education system in particular. I'm a product of that system, so I will say it can be done, yeah. But it's very hard. And when you start looking at education by race in this country, there are some stark differences, and particularly in how black students and brown students are disciplined, et cetera. Are you planning on addressing those issues in this season?
Yes. For our second episode, the focus is looking at school safety and what this idea of school safety is and the measures, the things that keep finding their ways into schools, things like scanners, things like police officers. What does that actually look like? What has that looked like for many black and brown students for decades? And what does it look like when you have the money to give those resources to schools, but don't necessarily have the money to give them STEM labs and give them arts programs.
How do you take a topic like this and inflect a little humor into it? Because that is sort of, I'm hoping and assuming, what you guys are going to attempt to do.
I think when you interact with people and you get their stories and you have their experiences, there is a humor that they bring to it. And so I think for me, my job is really just helping their stories feel both real and allowing the natural humor that's there to kind of come through.
The leaders of the strike were women, predominantly women.
Except for like one guy who really killed it with his posters. I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's... I'm used to mansplaining.
Ouch. But fair.
And then I get to go into the studio and do dumb, silly things because we can comment on clips of things, or I can just dress up in a weird costume for no real reason.
We should note there are no weird costumes today. That's pretty straightforward.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that.
I mean, unless you consider that a costume, I think it's pretty straightforward.
I don't consider it a costume. No, you could have very easily said right now, are you wearing a costume? Which would have told me that, it would have told me how you see my fashion sense.
Pivoting for a second, you mentioned The Daily Show, and let's just say the landscape right now on late night television is so male and so white. When you were at The Daily Show, I know that there was a dispute that you had with Jon Stewart over being the only black writer at the time. And I want to ask you, how has that changed? Because we know black writers in writers' rooms on shows like The Daily Show, Saturday Night Live, or any show really, is rare. Have you seen change?
I want to say yes, but I also am kind of siloed off. Our studios are in Brooklyn, and we don't have much interaction with any of the other shows. But I think it's not just about the people in the writers' rooms. It's also about looking at executives and how are we making sure that those decision makers, the ones who are the ones who can greenlight a show, that there is that diversity and inclusion on that level as well. That's where you're going to see the most change, and the most thoughtful change is if all your executives are just white guys, there may be 100 shows that are being pitched by people of color. What they're choosing may not be the thing that resonates with an audience of color or with their best interests in mind. They're coming from their own perspective and their own bias. And that may be, oh, we want a show that is specifically this thing. And that thing to people of color might feel stereotypical. It might feel like it is a caricature. And so while it's nice to see more people of color finding their ways into writers' rooms, finding their ways behind the camera, we still have to look at the decision makers.
Wyatt Cenac is the host of Wyatt Cenac's Problem Areas on HBO. Thank you, Wyatt.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.